What were the parts of Aaron Abke that had to be attended to, loved, and healed in order for your relationship with your dad, with your mom, to not be something that held you back from your own consciousness expanding?
Well, for me, the big battle through my 20s was this sort of belief in inadequacy. One of the things I teach in my programs is the three beliefs of the ego, that there's really just three root beliefs that the ego is ever operating from, and it can make lots of different variations of them all, but disguised behind it all is one of three beliefs. And even those three stem from the original belief, which is separation. I believe I'm separate from source, that's it. But once I believe that, the mind can create these three different pathways to express the belief in separation. The first belief is the belief in lack. So this fundamental core belief we all have as a human that something's just missing in me, just not good enough, not quite worthy enough. I got to go do something, complete myself somehow. I'm lacking something. That will create the second belief eventually, which is, I call it outcome happiness. Humans run with this underlying assumption behind almost everything we do that this outcome will make me happy.
When period. I have this much money, then I can breathe.
Yep. Then I'll truly be happy, I like to call it.
But what they don't know is once you hit that number, there's just more things
there's
to focus
on. There's a new outcome. The ego just replaces one outcome on the pedestal with another one. Tracing it back to the root belief for me is the key to transcending it, because the ego wants to keep you caught up in the story. And a lot of times trauma chasing, like people that need to find the root of why do I have this pattern? It must be because I was abused at this age. It's like, look, you sort of have to give that up at a certain point and just say, I believe I'm separate from love. That's the truth at the end of the day. I think I'm separate from God, from source. And once you accept that and love that part of yourself that fears that it's separate and that God doesn't love it or whatever, then you actually start to feel loved, because now you're giving love to yourself. Mm. Only what I have not given can ever be lacking, because it all comes from within me. So if I'm not giving something, how can I ever know it exists in me? The giving is the proof of having, right?
So there was the lack, there was the goal-oriented way of life. And then what was the third?
The third belief flows downstream of the second belief, which is essentially I'm in control. I'm the doer. I'm in control. I make the gears of life turn based on my decisions. I act independently from the universe, such that I can even fight against the universe sometimes, or I can conquer parts of the universe. It's this most distorted expression of the belief that you're separate. Because if all is one, then there isn't some isolated self somewhere choosing to do things in opposition to the universe, right? A Course in Miracles says, there's just God's will. Only God's will exists. And if you think there's any other kind of will, that's just a delusion on your part.
So if you were to look back, if you were to float above your timeline and you had a spaceship and you looked back at the previous version of Aaron and you, with love, you just looked at him and just saw him for where he was, maybe when the bank account was like the biggest deal and there was the cords popping of like the old beliefs around what money actually is. The reason I'm asking you this is because I've gone through my own freaking journey when it comes to money. Like, what does money actually mean to me? And I can say in my body to you that money is truly just a vehicle of expression of energy.
Yeah.
And it's not, yes, it is a spiritual thing, but it's actually really practical. Mm-hmm. It's really awesome because when I give you my time, my energy, I do it in a loving way, I receive abundance from the universe.
Yeah.
I never, ever thought I would say that.
Yeah.
7 years ago, like being $75,000 in debt, I would have never sat here and told you that. But I went through this understanding of maybe the three aspects that you've mentioned, by which all connect to the separateness, the illusion of separateness.
Yeah.
Was there a moment where you really felt one of those three connected to the illusion of separateness that you knew it was time to cut? And how exactly did you cut that to make it practical for everyone with us?
Yeah, I love talking about this from a practical standpoint, because there is a very practical way to apply the awareness of these beliefs and how to correct them. For me with money, it's the same as you expressed, that at some point you just realize it's kind of just a reflection of the value that I'm giving out into the universe. Because again, giving and receiving are one in the law of oneness. So if you want to get something, you have to first give it and then it can return back to you. what you keep, you lose from the law of one, right? Once you start focusing on giving value out rather than like, how do I make money? How do I get people to pay me money? It's such a negative way of thinking about money. Instead, it's like, how do I give so much value out such that money has to come back to me? Then the universe has to mirror your value in the form of what you're asking for. So yeah, if you produce great podcasts that help change people's lives, eventually you're going to be able to make money doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's how the law of one works. Giving mm-hmm. and receiving are one. So when I started understanding these three beliefs, it came through much more of a somatic way, which was just relating to my emotions of, okay, what kind of feelings do I suffer from every day? And I quickly realized it's just one of three feelings: sadness, anger, or fear. It's many variations of those three, right? But at the end of the day, those are the three root negative emotions we suffer from. And we have root chakra, sacral, solar plexus there. And so those emotions, if you understand what the emotional guidance system says, that your emotions are actually energetic indications of whether you're thinking and perceiving correctly about reality. So if I think something that causes a negative feeling in my body, that's actually my body reflecting back to me, and that's an incorrect way of perceiving yourself. So if I think I'm separate, I'm going to feel negative about that. And that's actually because it's not true. So if it feels bad, if it feels negative, it's not based in eternal truth. It's not true. If it feels good, joyful, abundant, loving, compassionate, peaceful, that's the body's way of saying, ding, 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 you're perceiving reality correctly. But it all comes back to our self-perception. So your emotions are never telling you what to do. They're never saying, take this action. The mind is saying, take this action. The emotion is just giving you feedback. It's not telling you to do anything. So your emotions are never speaking to your circumstances. And that's where we go wrong, where we say, well, you can't trust your emotions because they'll lead you astray. It's like, no, actually, by the time you feel negative, your emotions are telling you you've already gone astray. You're perceiving incorrectly. And then the mind will say, well, I feel angry, so I'm just going to punch somebody. And then the mind takes over from there. So when we understand what message we're getting from the emotional guidance system, we can learn to trust our feelings, have a deep relationship towards them, a positive relationship. And when I understood that, I said, well, there must be some kind of belief, right, tied to those three different emotions. What if that's true? What if I feel sad for a certain reason? What if I feel angry for a certain reason, or stressed out, anxious for a certain reason? And then after spending a lot of time contemplating that, it actually became very clear and self-evident what those beliefs are. Sadness is the emotional body's cue that you're believing in lack somehow, right? You think you're lacking something in this moment. A loved one dies, you have a breakup. Your mind is ruminating about what it's lacking in that moment. So sadness is telling you that. Whenever you're angry, my mom taught me this growing up, anger is what happens when a goal gets blocked or when an outcome gets blocked, right? When you don't get what you want, anger is the response.
Or when a boundary is crossed.
Right, which is a kind of outcome. Don't mm-hmm. cross my boundaries, mm-hmm. right? And then anxiety or fear or panic, worry, stress is what happens when you believe that you're losing control over something, right? That you can't control something. I can't breathe. Ah, panic attack. I can't control my breath. That's anxiety. So once I saw that, I said, well, fantastic. Now my practice is to just stay very aware of my emotions. And as soon as I recognize what feeling I'm suffering from, I'm gonna tell that emotion the truth that can correct its misperception. So for the belief in lack, when I feel sad, which was probably my greatest catalyst, was depression.
How long was the depression?
Through most of my 20s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right after I got married, all the way through my late 20s. There's a quote from A Course in Miracles I mentioned a minute ago that says, only what I have not given can ever be lacking. And so I started to repeat that to myself when I felt sad. And I would notice it would cause a somatic shift to happen where I started to feel better. Like, oh, that's right, it's just what I'm not giving. I'm not actually lacking love. I just haven't been giving myself love. And it would feel better to think that thought. So just going by every day, correcting that belief when you feel it happening is a very powerful way of rewiring your mind and your patterns. So then doing that with anger, when I feel angry, I just remember, oh, there's some kind of goal on a pedestal right now that I think when I get it, I'm going to be happy. And what helped me to say was, this outcome can't give me anything I really want. At the end of the day, right? It's just going to perpetuate more seeking. What I'm looking for really is just peace of mind. And that comes from not chasing stuff, right? So just remembering, outcomes aren't my savior. And then I feel a little somatic release there. Mm-hmm. A little peace comes over me. And then for anxiety, fear, stress, just repeating, I'm not in control. I'm being lived, right? The universe is living me. I'm like a wave in the ocean. The wave doesn't tell the ocean what to do. The wave is just an extension of the ocean. It's a oneness view, right? And then it feels, that's much more peaceful. God's in control. It's all going to work out whatever way it's supposed to. Mm. That became my practice for the better part of a year. And I saw so much reduction in my mental suffering in that year that I said, this is something I could teach other people how to do. And from there, a few years later, started my first program.
The weight of this is that it takes time. And just like you form a diamond, there's pressure that needs to be involved.
Yeah.
It's easy for someone to hear you say anxiety, depression, peace of mind, these terms, like I'm getting a huge feeling right now for everyone who's here. We've heard maybe these things before.
Right.
And we've heard them before because they were given in an intellectual way, which is really the byproduct of one of the pieces you mentioned, which was the control. I'm in control. Mm-hmm. So there has to be a humility when receiving what you're talking about. Otherwise, none of this can actually seep in or be embodied. There is lessons for us beyond what you're talking about when it comes to humility. And I find that in my own life, I've really only experienced the depth and understanding of what humility actually is when I've experienced the deepest throes of pain or trauma or something that forced me, honestly, forced me to be humble. How would you guide people to add this humility to the lessons we're talking about? Somebody could listen to this entire podcast. They could shift their life right now. Mm-hmm. Like if they're listening to it for the second or third time, the more you hear something, just like when you studied Ra and when you studied the Law of One, I think you listened to the audiobook three or four times. Right. And you
started nine times.
So you started to get more and more and more truth from a vibrational level when you heard it more.
Yeah.
How do you instill this humility in people and even in yourself? How do you do that beyond just the throes of pain?
Yeah. Well, from the perspective of sort of non-doership, it's kind of not something you can instill in yourself because it's something life gives you through your pain and suffering. So we could say the best thing you could do to integrate more humility is take advantage of your life catalysts, take advantage of the pain and the challenges in your life, allow them to humble you. And this is something I teach that sometimes people find to be taboo, which I think is fun. But it's this idea of sometimes the best thing I can do for myself is to kind of allow something to hurt for a minute. You know what I mean? Like, I need to take in the full weight of the implications of that mistake I just made because I don't want to make it again.
Yeah.
And that I made that mistake because I was too arrogant, too prideful, moving through life too quick, right? Barreling down the highway too fast and life is trying to slow me down. So I would do well to say, thank you, life. I'm just going to take a minute to receive that rather than slow down, got it, and just keep going. That's kind of what we do with our life catalysts sometimes.
Yes.
We don't really sit and learn them. And with that, I call it sort of, I have different ways of describing it. Holy embarrassment, sometimes I'll say. Like there's a righteous embarrassment of, I can't believe I just did that. I thought I was better than that. And I don't mean guilt trip yourself. I don't believe guilt is virtuous at all. It's a weapon of ego. But it's like, let's just feel the karmic slap enough to say, all right, that's on high alert in my awareness now. I'm going to make sure I don't make that mistake again.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you notice that as you go into new situations that would trigger your pride to come out, there's more space in you to say, not this time. I've learned that lesson.
I like that
phrase. That's humility.
I like that phrase, karmic slap. Because honestly, that's exactly what it feels like. And I've gotten it through life and also through different medicines and whatnot. So then the sacredness of integration for you as a man and for all the women listening and just for us as a human being, regardless of gender, how would you, I almost said define, which is a very masculine question. Yeah. It's not about defining integration. How would you share about what integration truly is for all beings, to be an integrated being with an integrated ego in here on the 3D, in this rock, in the middle of outer space?
Well, to be integrated is to be who you really are. So we could say to be integrated is to be authentic. There's a lot of inauthenticity that you can see happening in the spiritual community, because we have YouTube, we have books, we have all these outlets for knowledge sharing. So most people who are on a spiritual path have a lot of spiritual knowledge, and probably way more than people in the past have had, who didn't have the internet and 24 access to any book they could ever want about every subject. So we're so blessed, right, that we have all this knowledge, but the ego can use whatever you've learned but have not integrated. It can use it as a weapon against you. It can weaponize it. Case in point, with a teaching like oneness, the ego will use any spiritual concept to trick you into bypassing feeling something, healing something, right? What you feel, you heal. Ego doesn't want you to sit with your pain and love it and forgive it. It wants you to bypass it. And it loves using spiritual teachings to do that. So for example, if I am God, if I'm the creator, then I'm already free and perfect, and I don't need to work on myself because I am that. I am the one. And that's true from the absolute perspective, but from the relative perspective, you're not experiencing being God everywhere at all time and space. You're experiencing a certain body and a certain life and a certain story, and that's also divine. And so for me, the first rule for embodiment and integration and presence is always acknowledge the human level of a experience first before you rush off to the divine. Like, you just can't be an embodied being if you're so up here in the higher chakras and never down here, right? Mm. Life is asking you to be a human first. That's why you are one. And so what's the human level of this situation asking of me? How can I be of service from a human level? And then we can bring in the divine perspective after that and say, now, what is God doing from a greater picture in this experience? And then we can understand things like acceptance and surrender. So embodiment is an element of learning how to live, respond from love, which to me is just open-hearted acceptance of everything. I never see anything wrong in the universe, right? I never see anything incorrect or bad happening in the universe. Those labels have been removed from my awareness now. I see challenges. I see pain.
You see evil, I'm sure.
Right, like difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. You see people doing heinous things to one another.
Yeah.
You still discern what's going on, but you've dropped your judgments about it as rejecting part of creation and accepting part of another part of it. We have to also love our enemies. We have to also love the darkness and the light so we can be integrated. And so the classic example of an unintegrated spiritual person is the love and light person, where everything's just love and light.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, everything is love and light, but there's also an illusion going on called darkness that carries a lot of consequence and weight to it. And there's a lot of beings in this universe suffering greatly from that illusion. And so love would have us meet that illusion and accept it and embrace it and bring it in and bring it close, remind it of the truth, rather than say, well, that's invalid and not love and light, so I reject it.
Yeah.
That's not embodiment, right?
Mm, it's beautiful, man. That's really good.